Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, July 7th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Download it. Print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have called in and been stepped through the use of that worksheet process. Those shows can serve as a tutorial for you. And with multiple listenings, you can dramatically improve the results you get in the application of this tool, these tools. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you do that, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do all of that soon and often, because it frequently leads to comments, questions, testimonials, answers, and improved quality of life for the people that are actually using these tools in their lives day to day. Today is a Thursday, so that means we'll have a support group that's available. It's absolutely free. You can join us through Zoom. All the information you need to join us from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time tonight is available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And there's a separate page for the information for logging in on Thursday and a separate page for information logging in on Tuesday. And we'd be happy to have you join us, or we'd be happy to have you forward that information to anybody you think might benefit from joining us. We've also been working with the Way of Mastery since January 10th. And yesterday we finished reading about the 15th lesson, so the three lessons into the Way of Transformation. And yet again, as we reach the end of the lesson, the text itself challenges us to go back and read and reread, because there's so much that goes against what we've been conditioned to think and feel and believe in our cultures, in our family, certainly anybody in the Western mind. One of the fundamental things, one of the bedrocks of this work is that is directly opposite what our culture teaches us, is that each and every one of us is actively creating our experience of life in each moment. And what we do with our mind energy, what we do with our thought process, the thoughts we value, the thoughts we defend, the thoughts we hold on to, the thoughts we argue for, what we do in that process is infinitely more important than the flow of life around us, than the events that seem to happen, than the idea of what I'm attracting or not attracting, because it's that actual mechanism of choosing the focus of the thoughts that I will value and fight for or argue for or pour my mind energy into. It's that that drives this mechanism that people talk about when they talk about the law of attraction and the law of resonance in the universe. We don't get to choose how the law of resonance works. We don't get to choose how the law of attraction works. It just works. It's just there. It's in place. It's like gravity. What we do have the ability to work with, to change, is where we point our thought process, the thoughts we choose, the thoughts we pour our mind energy into over and over and over again, the thoughts we value. That's what we have the option to change. And that is the mechanism by which we construct our experience of life. I think I had three separate sessions yesterday where this was part of the theme, coming back to the basics, coming back to the realization that when I have a negative emotional state active in my mind or a negative thought about myself or somebody else, I can instantly know three things. Number one, it's a lie or based in a falsehood. Number two, it's not about what's going on in the moment. This is an old tape playing in my mind. And number three, if I sit and think in that direction, pour more mind energy into it, or I speak or I take an action from that negative perspective, it's just going to make my life situation worse. It's like pouring garbage all over the dinner table right before I serve food. It's ridiculous. It can't improve my experience of life. And this is essentially the opposite of what our culture has taught us. Our culture has taught us that when we are irritated, we're angry, when we're sad, when we're scared, it means someone or something outside of us is wrong, and we either need to attack them, or we need to run away from them, or we need to bribe them or seduce them to try and get them to change so that we don't have to feel the emotion we're feeling. And this is the opposite of what this course teaches. This is the opposite of what the Course in Miracles teaches. It's the opposite of the core of the work that Krishnamurti taught and Guy Finley teaches and Dr. Michael Rice teaches. It's the opposite of what we can observe as the actual process of creation of our life experience. I had, as I mentioned, three different examples yesterday where people were talking about how this situation made them angry, made them feel shame, made them sad or scared. And when I hear those phrases, when I'm in the middle of a session, it's my job to point that out. Do you realize that you just spoke as though you actually believe people and things outside of you control your emotions without any input from you? That you are a victim of the world you see? And do you realize that that's exactly the opposite of what's been pointed out to us over and over again in the work we do in therapy and in the work that you can do in the Course in Miracles and the work you can do in the Way of Mastery and the work you can do in the Byron Katie work or in Ho'oponopono or in Guy Finley's work or in Diedrich Wolfach's work, the Choose Again process, which is so similar to Dr. Michael Rice's worksheet. All of these people have tapped into this same observational truth, and whether they got there from different source points or source material or all the same source material is irrelevant. When you're actively observing in your life, you will notice, especially if your observational windows have been broadened to include questioning everything you've ever been taught about how the world works, about who or what is causing your emotional response. When you have been introduced to the possibility that it's not just possible, it's absolutely likely that when you question things rather than coming from a space of knowing, your experience of life will start to get better by leaps and bounds. So we have patterns. We have patterns that are taught by the culture. We have patterns that people have recognized and written about in books for decades now, many decades now. Patterns like what happens in a family where there's alcohol abuse. Patterns of like what happens within a family system when there's a narcissist as one of the parents or both of the parents. Patterns that develop between individuals when they get into a relationship and they develop a verbally and emotionally abusive pattern. And it's mind-boggling when you first start looking at this because we're taught to think of ourselves as individuals and independent and every family is different. And when over and over again, when I introduce people to books like Melody Beattie's Codependent No More, or the Adult Children of Alcoholics books, or the Verbally Abusive Relationship, How to Recognize and Respond, over and over and over again, people read these books and they go, oh my God, this person's got cameras in my house. How did they know that? How did they know all the different roles that my family members would play? How did they know that one person was going to be singled out to be the scapegoat in this family? And whenever anything went differently than the family members wanted it to, they would all point the finger at this one person and say, he did it, or she did it, or they're responsible. How did they know? They know because we fall into patterns. We are creatures of habit. There is an actual mechanism that creates our experience of life and the emotions that we experience, and we are taught to ignore that. We are taught that something else is going on that, by the way, never really happened. No one's ever made you feel angry or sad or scared or hurt. That's been this interaction between the flow of life and their choices and how it impacted you and your choice of how to interpret and respond to it. And it doesn't mean that you're bad or wrong when you choose an interpretation that creates upset in you, or you choose an interpretation of a life event that leads you to download so much traumatic energy that you have post-traumatic stress pattern that plays itself out over and over again in your life. That's not blaming you for that. That's just discerning, here's what was happening, here's the mechanism by which it happened, and here are the choices that the individuals involved were making. So here's the choice. What choice are we making? Over and over again through this work, the word choice, chooses, choose, happens over and over and over again. So much so that right near the end of the 15th lesson here, I found five words that I thought, oh, this could be the summary of this work. The choice is always yours. From the beginning, I think in just the first book itself, there's over 100 uses of the word choice. How do you go through life without realizing that you always have choice? Well, because we're trained, we're conditioned, we're brainwashed, we're acculturated, we're all these different words, but we aren't born knowing the language. And we aren't born with these laws of the universe embedded in us. We aren't like the robin that automatically knows how to make a robin's nest. And we aren't born like the little eagle chicks that know better than to get rid of their waste in the nest. They know to hang their rear ends over the end of the nest. We aren't born with that stuff. So we learn it. Who do we learn it from? We learn it from our family. We learn it from our culture. We learn it from our language. And if we're lucky, we get introduced to works like this that let us question anew, that remind us over and over again, the choice is always yours. Five words to summarize this book and all this teaching. The choice is always yours. So we get to the 15th lesson out of 35 lessons. We get to the third lesson in the second book. And the title of it says, the choice is yours. There's love or fear. The choice is yours. How will you choose? What is the dynamic that transforms your choice into your experience of life? How can you understand that better? So to review lesson 15, the text reads, we come forth with great joy to abide with you. So again, it's we. It's not just one entity. It's not just Yeshua. It's not a personality. It's not someone that we need to put up on a pedestal and praise and honor. This is just knowledge, questioning, journeying with fellow journeyers, brothers and sisters, as equals. This is exploring and learning. This is not about religion. This is not about deification, putting somebody up on a pedestal. We, as a team, come forth with great joy to abide with you, to share our love for you in celebration of the truth that we are but one mind and one heart. Everyone who has consciousness is part of consciousness. There is no separation. All the ideals about separation are hallucination. They are illusion. And if we choose them and we choose to pour our belief into them, we create an experience of being separate and separated, because that's the power of our mind energy, of our thought process to create. The text goes on and says, for those who choose to release all illusions and journey to the heart of the creation, there can only be oneness, brotherhood, sisterhood, eternally. There can only be one purpose and one goal. There can only be Christ expressing the mind of God, the mind of Christ, the Christ mind, this word we have for this expansive, connected, integrated experience of consciousness that realizes that it is connected to all things. The text goes on and says, therefore, indeed, it is with great joy that we come forth to abide with you in this lesson. And we would ask you to slow down, to get centered, to breathe and soften, to make yourself open and available to what this lesson has to offer, to put aside the roar and the din of the world, and to simply hold the thought in the mind for just the briefest of moments that right now, as you're doing this work, as you're listening to this, if you're reading along in the book, right now, you need not be concerned for anything. The world that you've dreamt into being, simply to experience it, that world can be placed upon a shelf so that in this now, there is simply this experience, this questioning, this presence. The text goes on and says, focus on your willingness to prepare a place for us. Focus on your willingness to hear the subtle vibrations translated as thoughts into the words that are being spoken that can direct the heart toward the soul, that can direct the soul toward the spirit, and that can direct the spirit into awakening fully as the presence of the thought of love in form. For this is what you are made to be, and this is what you are eternally, regardless of the vibrations of thoughts that you allow to make a home in your mind temporarily, regardless of the shameful thoughts, regardless of the angry thoughts, regardless of the hurt thoughts, regardless of the overwhelmed thoughts. The truth of what you are is the miracle of life expressing in form. You as a person, you as an entity, you as an energy field are every bit as much a miracle as the Grand Canyon or the galaxy that we're spinning in or the most gorgeous sunrise or sunset you've ever seen. You are that same miracle. You are that same mystery. And what they're asking us to do here in the beginning of this lesson is slow down and just tap into that and understand that as a part of the flow of life and creation, when I sit down to review some work like this, there's nothing more important for me to do than just be with the work. Be with the realization of my true nature. Be in the state of observation. And if I can begin there, if I'm willing to make that adjustment as I begin to read, I'll get more out of this. I'll get more out of this than I could ever dream possible. Because the truth of who you are is far more important than any negative thoughts or judgments that you've allowed to make a home in your mind. They're illusions. They're temporary. Your true nature is permanent. It's eternal. It's always been and will always be. Consciousness is. The text goes on and says, you have a term in your legal system called temporary insanity. And the lawyer says, my client is not guilty. It was just temporary insanity. And this text wants us to know, to really be assured, that every time we buy into a negative thought about ourselves or somebody else, that's exactly what we've done. We've been temporarily insane. This work wants us to know there is no creator out there that's going to judge us and slap us down and smack us into purgatory or hell or because we didn't do what he, she, or it wanted us to do. There's an understanding that we have the ability to choose. There's an understanding that we are under instruction, that life is a school of learning, that we will make choices that carry with them consequences that we would prefer not to have. And over time, we will awaken to the truth of how it's our choices that create the experience we have. And when we create an experience we'd prefer not to have, then we can choose again. The last part of that paragraph says, knowing that this is true allows us to understand that no judgment has been passed. You have never been made wrong by your Creator. You have never failed to create and attract precisely the most beautiful lessons that have been triggered for you for what you most need to learn and what you most need to feel. In each moment, you exist in an exquisite perfection of your own making and your own collaboration with another. I think the last time I read this, I was talking about a patient that I had, and it came in and he was complaining that as he'd gotten depressed over the last year or two, he's gotten more and more angry. And the thing that brought him into therapy was that he had an interaction with a neighbor that started with a pleasant greeting, and then the next thing you know, the topic turned to politics. And my patient found himself screaming, swearing, name-calling, and challenging his neighbor to a fistfight. Now, that's not very loving. That's not what we're talking about in this work. But at the same time, at another level, that's exactly what we're talking about in this work. That person that's my patient and one of the neighbors in his subdivision, wherever he lives, entered into an interaction with each other that ends up being the perfect, perfect setup of teaching and interaction and leverage for growth that triggered for each of them what they most need to learn, what they most need to feel, what they most need to change within their choice structure to have a different life. And do I recommend swearing, name-calling, and screaming at neighbors? No. Challenging them to fights? No, I don't recommend that at all. I do, however, recommend that if it happens, that I own it. That I'm not in denial of it, that I'm not going to blame it on what somebody else said or did. I'm going to recognize, oh my, I have all of this intense, you know, threat response behavior and rage and hurt and confusion in me. I wonder how I'm creating that. I wonder what roadblocks to seeing myself as the truth of love expressing in form that I might need to remove in this moment from my consciousness, and whatever's in there that would prevent me from seeing my neighbor as the blessing that he or she is. And I can remove those roadblocks from my consciousness as well. But I can only do that if I own my actions. One of the ways I used to talk about this was to say, you never truly lose until you quit. So when you lose, don't lose the lesson. Because every lesson, every mistake, every misstep, every faux pas, every error, every failure that you might consider you have contains valuable lessons. But the only way to learn the lesson is to own the mistake, own the misstep, own the faux pas, own the origins of the energies that you experience and share. And so the only way to learn the lesson is to own the action, the thought, the emotion, the creation of the emotion. So when you lose, don't lose the lesson. Own it. Because you never truly lose until you quit. Until you quit owning 100% responsibility for what you're doing with your mind energy, which creates your experience of life and your emotions and the motivation for your behaviors, because it's choosing from the pool of intentions, it's choosing a goal and deciding to act on it. And that's what drives your behavior. So the text goes on and says, "You, therefore, my beloved friends, are already as I am. We merely work together to restore your mind and restore to your mind what the Creator has placed there since before the beginning of time. We work together in joy and in innocence and in perfect simplicity to recall, to remember what is true always. And then we work together to explore the expansion of that truth beyond the boundaries of every fearful thought, beyond the limitations of every egoic perception, beyond even the body itself, which can only be a temporary communication device, and it's usable only within the very thin slice of creation that you call the physical world. This is one of the weirdest things about being in a body, having this life that we have. We have, I just flashed on the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? And the book Down the Rabbit Hole with What the Bleep Do We Know? Or the movie. Because there are several examples in that movie about how little we actually experience through our five senses. And how our science has developed these scanning and listening and measuring devices over the decades that let us get access to things like ultraviolet and infrared and radio waves and X-rays and TV waves, the auric field, the Curlian photography that shows energy fields around plants and animals and humans. And the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know, and especially the one, the version of it called Down the Rabbit Hole, the extended version, has lots and lots of hard science to demonstrate to us how restricted we are when we rely exclusively on our five senses, and how further restricted we are because we don't even get access to anything more than a tiny fraction of what our senses are registering. So we only access a tiny fraction of what our senses are registering, and our senses are only registering a tiny fraction of what's happening in life in each new present moment. And yet we are taught and we are coached and we are in some cases threatened, pressured to believe that we know what's right and what's wrong and who should have this and who should have that. And it's the root of all the arguments that we have. We argue because we think we're right and somebody else is wrong. And we're arguing about, you know, like the foam at the tip of a wave. When the movement of the ocean goes on and on and on, doesn't really care about the motion at the tip of a wave. It's not really the issue. What's the issue? The issue is, as a previous lesson said, you are unlimited spirit. You are not simply limited to your physical body. And if you wake up to the fact that you are unlimited spirit and that there's a lot more going on here than just your physical sensations and your five senses, then you can start to use time differently to develop that awareness and strengthen it. Dr. Michael Rice says it's a lecture titled Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. And in it he says it's really useful for him to think in terms of having a primary purpose and a secondary purpose. In the primary purpose, he says, it's really useful to think that every human being has the same primary purpose, and that is to develop and then strengthen a viable, conscious spiritual body. Well, that's the essence of these last few lessons. You are unlimited spirit. Once you wake up to that, we suggest that you start using your time wisely to train yourself into that awareness, to expand the awareness that your family and your culture has given you about this is your nose and this is your little finger and this is your knee and this is your elbow. And we've been taught to perceive the world through a language, through a set of filters, through a set of false dynamics about how you made me angry, you hurt my feelings. And that's what we've been trained to do, and that's what we've trained our brain to show us, and that's not all there is going on here. So Dr. Michael Rice says, your primary purpose for being awake and aware and alive in a body is to wake up to the fact that there's a lot more going on here than just your body. So we want you to develop and then strengthen a viable, conscious spiritual body. And then he suggests a secondary purpose, which, you know, people can look up on the internet. It's a process for putting together how you, as a unique spark of creation with certain strengths and weaknesses and interests and passions, might start to use your energy to focus it to help make the world be the way it looks to you would be perfect, to move the world towards perfection through your lens. You've been given, and the passion, fun, the play. What feels like play to one person doesn't really feel like play to somebody else. So it takes all kinds, and whatever your particular interests, if you choose to put your time, intelligence, money, and energy into them in a way to use them to make the world be more of the way you think it should be, everybody benefits. So the idea is we want to expand awareness of the truth, and we want to work together to explore the expansion of that truth beyond the boundaries of every fearful thought, beyond the limitations of every egoic perception, beyond even the body itself, and to wake up and realize that the body is just a very temporary communication device. It's only useful within this very thin slice of creation that we call the physical world. And there's a lot more going on than just the physical world. The text continues and says, beloved friends, the way of transformation does indeed require your commitment. It's not demanding your commitment. No one can force you to make this commitment. But if you want to be in the process of transformation, you have to engage your ability to commit and to choose the focus of your awareness, the focus of your thoughts, such that you are changing how you use your time. You're advocating for yourself to the wise use of time. We will drift away from this. We will have times where our commitment wavers, where we get distracted. And the text reads, where you feel that your commitment has wavered, when you become aware of it, just take a breath. Simply choose anew. Soften up. Chuckle at it. Laugh at it. And choose anew. If you do that, the end of your journey is perfectly certain. For as you have created your imagined separation from the Creator, so too do you imagine and bring into form the images that bring you in this pathway to return you to the awareness of your true reality. You awaken from the dream by recognizing that it's just a dream. So it's, the text goes on and says, we now embark upon the next lesson and study period in which you have the choice to become fully committed to heeding every single word and to letting the vibration be brought forth by that word and letting it settle into your consciousness ever more deeply into the nervous system of the body as it settles likewise into the depth of your mind and your heart. Can you, will you choose to slow down and soften and breathe like it's recommended in the beginning of this lesson to put away the rush and the din of the crowd, all the noise? We cannot be distracted. We can't be multitasking and get what's being offered in a lesson like this. We would ask you to set aside the roar and the din of the world and simply hold the thought that none of that matters for now. All of that thoughts about myself and the world and my family and who needs this and that and how I screwed that up and how I was so magnificent at that, all of that is a fantasy and can be put on a shelf so that I can settle in with this teaching, with this questioning, with this exploration. But we now embark upon the next lesson and study period, and we each have the choice. Will we be fully committed to this, or will we be distracted? And it's okay either way. There's no one going to judge you, beat you up, except yourself. You can always do it yourself. But there's no one outside of you who has any actual impact on you that you don't give to them through your own fantasy. There's no one who's going to judge you as bad or wrong. Not the Creator, not any of the many deities that people have talked about over the years. What matters is your choice. And any time you don't like what your choice of thought has brought to you, you're free to choose anew. As you have created the fantasy of being separate from your Creator, you can create the fantasy of reconnecting. You can bring your awareness back to the truth of your true nature. Text goes on and says, therefore, fear not, for you are the creator of your journey home. You are the creator of all that you perceive. Just in case you missed it, on page 5 of this book, where it says, here's the first axiom, please just let this thought into your mind. Nothing that you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. Here we are, page 180. Therefore, fear not, for you are the creator of your journey home. You are the creator of all that you perceive. You are the one given the infinite power of the mind of the Creator to see through the eyes of love, to rest in perfect safety, and to embrace all that comes to you in the simple reality that you've called it to you, perhaps as a challenge, but always as an opportunity to expand your commitment to the flow of love, flow of life, flow of creation. That's all that's happening here. Imagine how different your life would be if you had been taught this from childhood on. I remember Julie Haverstick would talk about working in some of the most challenging grade school situations in a city, in a downtown city area, and she would bring people in. She'd been exposed to Dr. Michael Rice's work, and she would write something on the board about how you are love, and, you know, the truth of your nature is, you know, you're a spiritual being, etc. I forget exactly the wording. It's probably in the book Healing Children, Loving Children. But she would write that on the board, and she would say to them, this is what you're here to learn this year. All of the other stuff about math and science and geography, that'll happen over time after you've learned that your true nature is love, that you're connected to everyone and everything, that everyone is always doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have. And when we're off the mark, we feel the negative consequences, and we just need to choose again. So here's the last paragraph we just read. It reminded me of that. Therefore, fear not, for you are the creator of your journey home. You are the creator of all that you perceive. You are the one given the infinite power of the mind of the creator to see through the eyes of love. You can always choose to see through the eyes of love. You can always choose to rest in perfect safety and to embrace everything that comes to you in the simple reality that you've called it to yourself, and you can experience it any way you'd like to. It's always an opportunity to expand your commitment to love. It's always another opportunity to choose to teach only love. That's what your life is moment to moment. It's an opportunity to choose to teach only love, to expand your commitment to love. The text goes on and says, and where love is chosen so that you want nothing else, you will see nothing else but a lovely world. Infinite in dimension, sparkling in clarity, radiant in beauty. You will look upon it and you will say, behold, this is the way it is. This is perfect just as it is. This is life unfolding. So, we've got about 10 minutes left, plenty of time for comments, questions, answers, testimonials. I'm thinking I'm just going to leave that there for today, just the first page and a half of Lesson 15 as a review. How does that sit with you? How does that strike you? What does that stir up for you? 563-999-3581. Or if you're listening to this in the archives, you can send us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org. And if we get those email questions, comments, testimonials, answers, refutations, whatever it might be, we will address them on the internet show. And as time allows, send you a response email to let you know approximately when, what day and time we address that, so you can check the archives for your response. So, 10 minutes left, plenty of time for a comment or a question. 563-999-3581. Area code 760. You are in the air. Who do we have?
This is Anne.
Hello, Ann.
I'm between tears and joy listening to this. I was listening to a couple of the archives earlier this morning. And then I started working on some stuff that I hadn't done for like 6 months. So the package that I was working on while I was listening to you had to do with going to the pastor's kids and Christmas, and so I made it a Christmas in July. And I'm trying to figure out, it seems to feel like the tears are coming because I'm allowing myself to be in this creative state. And letting go of all the past stuff of what would people say, you know, of waiting so long to do this or that. And the smiles, I was smiling the whole time I'm wrapping this package and being creative and finding the Christmas paper that had these little cartoon characters on it and listening. And then I heard the part that says, okay, about the multitasking, and I go, I stayed out of the negative with that because I realized, okay, wait a minute. I am multitasking, however, I am creating, and I'm enjoying it because I guess it comes from teaching kindergarten for a while, that I'm enjoying putting this together, and it's finally getting done, and I'm feeling this great accomplishment, and I'm taping the little tags on it now. It's done, and it's like, it feels really good, but that I was creating it, and I could stay out of by listening to the what you were reading, even though, you know, I just heard it earlier this morning, but I heard different things. What a pleasure it was, and I go, so where's the tears coming from, and where, and I don't know, so I don't know if I'm making sense, but it's these two emotions kind of flip-flopping like a seesaw. I don't know.
Well, let's
help me out.
Let's clarify that there's nothing in this work that recommends or encourages you to beat yourself up because you're multitasking. Right?
Oh,
this work
over
and over again. This work over and over again says no one's judging you. You've never been wrong. You're just living a life. You're learning as you go. You are a spark of the divine mind. You're creating this for the experience that it brings you. It's all okay. This is not a zero-sum game where you win and somebody else loses and somebody else wins and you lose. Every time we choose a thought like, oh, I should not be doing this, we're creating. And it's okay. We have the freedom to create as we want to create. If I want to create anger and bitterness and sadness, I'm free to do that. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just a set of choices that I can be with and be aware of and decide, do I prefer the results I get when I make those choices, or do I prefer to do something else? That's all. That's the core of this work over and over and over again. So when you notice that you're basically beating yourself up because you're multitasking, just notice, oh, look at that. Look what I've stepped into. That's an old pattern. If it's a negative thought about myself or somebody else or a negative emotion, I can instantly know three things. Number one, it's a lie. It's based on a falsehood. Number two, this is not about what's going on right now. This is an old tape playing. I wonder who in my family of origin or my parents or my schooling teachers or ministers or priests, if I looked up to some authority figure, I wonder where I downloaded this, you're bad, you're wrong, you're screwing it up. Because that's an old tape playing. And I don't need to keep playing it. I can just acknowledge it, breathe and soften, see it as false, and use any of the myriad tools I might have been exposed to dismantle it, or to at least to withdraw my value of it. Right? If I can see it as false, then I don't value it. If
right.
I think
okay,
it's
so
true, then I pour value into it, and I say, oh, my gosh, I'm doing it wrong, and that's really bad, and I'm screwing this up, and I give value to it. That's what creates its impact on me.
Okay, so that's where the tears are coming from. The tears are like, okay, part of me is letting go of that, what you just described, that I don't have to beat myself up, that I can stay in this creative state. And then the joy side, when I would smile and just enjoy what I'm doing in the moment, you know, which is wrapping this and seeing the characters and being creative about how I'm going to put the tag on and stuff like that, that's on the other side of it. So it's like, it sounds like I'm in this process of letting go of the old and recognizing it, and that part's coming up. It's almost like grieving that. Okay, now I can let go of that. And then enjoying the creativeness that I just did. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It sounds like that might be exactly what's happening. And if you keep your breath moving and you just...
Yeah.
Soften into it and say, oh, this is what's happening. I wonder what I might learn from it. I wonder how I might just relax into it and experience it differently.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what I might discover about negative thoughts about myself. You know, there's a false thought out here that says you've always got to know and understand what your tears are about. You've got to label them. You've got to understand them, you've got to see the dynamic behind them, that it's not okay to just let it be.
Yeah, right.
There's another false set of thoughts out there about how we must always be working.
Yeah.
Never take time off. Always doing worksheets or EFT tapping or breathing or and if not, you're wasting your time. That's just a thought. And if it leaves you with a negative emotional reaction or tension, you can instantly know that it's a lie. It's based in a falsehood, and it's not the truth.
Mm.
What is the truth? I don't know what the truth is. I just know that if I choose a thought and pour my mind energy into it such that it generates this negative emotional state or upset, I can instantly know that's not the truth. And so
yes.
I can
yes.
breathe and soften and ask to be shown what's the truth or what's mine to do here or how can I be a blessing to myself or others. That's a far more productive choice for living life and learning and growing than walking into situations knowing that I know I'm right and they're wrong and my teacher says we always have to be working and I need to do 5,000 worksheets before I die or I'm never going to get out of this life or all of those thoughts, if they result in a negative emotional state, I can instantly know they are in error. And that's woven into the
yep.
Michael Rice worksheet. If I'm in pain, my thoughts are in error. So,
yes.
Thank you for the call, and I hope that helped clarify some things, and I hope you soften and let yourself just have the emotions and enjoy them.
Thank you. Yes, blessings.
Blessings. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you. Thank you, Tim.
Hey. Can you hear?
Ah, I hear Michael's voice already, too.
Yeah, I got in. It wouldn't let me in the first time I dialed.
Awesome. Well, let's just do the intro and say welcome to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. And today is Thursday, July the 7th, 2022. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you into queue. Well, Michael, give us an update.
Well, I was just heading out to the car from the hospital to do the radio show, and I noticed that there were a couple of empty rooms down the hall. So hopefully if nobody from the hospital comes in and says, you can't be in here, I'll be able to sit here for the next hour and do the show and be able to stay in air conditioning rather than going out into the heat, the cold, the muggy, cold, close heat. So update. Well, let's see. About 24 hours before I got here, hospice could not get a heartbeat from Joel, could not get any blood pressure. Oxygen was way down, and they gave him somewhere between 12 and 24 hours to live. And so when I arrived, he was laying prone. He was able to respond with a hand squeeze if his wife asked him a question, but he was pretty much non-responsive. And we just started to do some energy work and started to talk about things that interest Joel. And, well, the upshot is within 20 minutes he was up singing a song with me. And now, 24 hours later, he's not qualified to be in hospice care in this hospital anymore. They're kicking him out. So we just did a meeting with his hospice care worker and the hospital administration, and it looks like he's going to go to NHC, a recovery facility, for a couple of weeks of intensive physical therapy to see if we can get him. You know, it's been 3 weeks laying in a bed and pretty much non-functional. We've got most of the edema out of his feet, put him on the Avacyn, and got some extra blood flow going, and he's able to raise his legs and kick and, you know, do some resistance pushing on getting muscles activated. And apparently he was in rehab before he got here, but he was very resistant, wouldn't cooperate with anything. And we talked about how important his grandkids are to him and that he wants to teach them music. So he's now got plans for a new album. We had a couple of gentlemen that lead a thing called Kirtan, which is a Eastern music celebration, spiritual musical celebration. At least that's my best understanding of it. They showed up this morning, and we did a Kirtan session. Yesterday afternoon, he has two grandchildren that are 6 and 7 years of age, his son's children, and they can't come in the hospital. So his wife parked around at the back of the hospital where his room is and brought them to the window so they could see him. Well, we ended up opening the window, and the kids ended up in the room with him. It was like a free-for-all going on. It was just like a big party. And Betty, you know, if you can think of Betty, I'm not sure. I won't talk about her age, but she's not a young lady. And apparently, as the stress going on, she's lost about 20 pounds, so she's kind of pretty trim. And she climbed in through the window with us. And instead of walking, you know, because she'd parked her car at the back so that he could see the kids through the window, she would have had to have walked all the way out to the front of the hospital and all the way around. So if I have a video of her, I've threatened to put her on the Internet, but I really won't. But she climbed back out the window to get to her car. So we had a fun day yesterday, and last night was a good night. He ate a few. We hadn't been eating in days, and we got him drinking water, and he ate a couple of strawberries and a couple of grapes and had some ice cream. And this morning we did
apple just, Michael, move your microphone just a tad. It's catching all of your breath coming through. It's kind of popping.
A little bit away. Okay. Is that better? Yeah, I don't have my regular headset microphone with me. I've got a string microphone. So in any event, this morning had a pretty good breakfast. He actually wanted eggs. It's the first time he's eaten in well over a week. And so hopefully he'll be out of here this afternoon, as I will. I'm going to be on an airplane to Boston tomorrow morning. So I don't know if you got my text asking if you could check and see if we could get a hotel up there since Betty is sick. I don't know what's going on with her. But since she's ill, I don't think it's a good idea for me to go and stay at her house. So I'll have to get a hotel up close to the airport and fly out in the morning to Boston, be back here Sunday and see how Joel's doing and keep back in with the family and see what's happening. I've been teaching his sons how to do some body work with him, how to do some movement. We moved probably 3 pounds of fluid out of each of his feet this morning. And so he's rocking. He's doing pretty good. He's ready to start singing. And, you know, the guys came in to do this little, they came to see him, and one guy brought his guitar and ended up doing this kirtan music. So it was a pretty sweet morning. It was fun. And thank you for the food that you packed for me before I go. I'm still eating that. I took some pictures of what they call food here, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, the people, the little small hospital in Lawrenceville, Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, sweet. I mean, everybody is really cool, sweet, helpful, cooperative, just really sweet. But probably the average person working here is 80 to 120 pounds overweight. I mean, and the food, it's like the temple of death in terms of what they serve on a plate. It's just unbelievable. But that's what it is for today. And so, other than that, it's rock and roll. How about there? How's Ari Rain doing this morning?
She's doing good. We went out and harvested this morning, and she ate like 8 or 9 cherry tomatoes for breakfast.
Right off
and
the vine?
And then she ate Aroma. Yeah, yeah. And then she ate Aroma tomato. So that's been the majority of her food today. And I actually made some healthy Kodiak biscuits and some vegan gravy with sausage, vegan sausage in it. And she ate the gravy and sausage, but she didn't eat a biscuit. But then we had breakfast with Ryan, and he's doing well in his new job. And so then Aria and I have played multiple games. And so just she's taking her rest right now.
Cool. Well, I got a new, I had to go in and get some things at Kroger yesterday, and they had a sidewalk game. You guys spend so much time out on the driveway drawing with chalk, but they have a sidewalk game that I got for her yesterday. So I'll bring that back with me when I come home. So if you're out there in listener land, that's the saga for today. What's happening in your world? What can you share with us? How can we support you? How is your experience and use of the tools serving you? What can you share with our audience about how that's impacting your life? And or can we answer questions on any aspect of the tools, from forgiveness, the reality management process, to communication, to codependence, to healing through relationships, to purpose, personal power, commitment? What's on your mind? How can we support you?
And we have a handout.
We have anybody? Oh, great. Let's say hello.
Okay. It's area code 520. You're on the air. Who do we have?
Audrey from Tucson, Arizona.
Oh,
well, welcome,
heard you in a
young
while.
Lady.
Welcome.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice. How are you?
I'm doing. Uh-huh. Waiting for Saturday,
okay.
Which might be 107. So to the
say that once
here.
Again.
Sorry, I don't know if you can hear my phone is a little bit tweaked. 107 is predicted for Saturday, so we're in the triple digits.
Ouch! Stay indoors.
But yes, thank goodness for air conditioning. Michael,
oh, man,
I'd
are
like
you
to
right
have.
On that? Go ahead.
I'd like to have feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I find, you know, I'm questioning my belief systems. And then
right.
I go back and I say, well, why do I have this belief? How do I have this belief? And then I say, well, I've been brought up that this is right and this is wrong. Now when I study the Course in Miracles, which I'm not sure I'm gleaning this correctly, that embrace all, accept all, allow all. But my judgment of what is right and what is wrong, I'm keeping myself stuck.
Well, here would be my input. Notice that the Course doesn't say do it all. Stick with what you know is right for you. Now, right and wrong in itself, that whole conversation creates a major error. And let me explain that. We'll step back a couple of steps and lay some foundation for what I'm going to say. If you go to the opening words in the book of John, and where we're told it says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. It actually doesn't say that at all. What it says is, in the beginning was the mind energy, and the mind energy became flesh. Now, if we look at what the cell biologists are telling us today, they verify that that is absolutely true. And what they show is that when you think a thought, that thought turns into a molecule in your body. That molecule is called a neuropeptide. That
right.
neuropeptide that has just appeared in your body is going to circulate throughout your cellular structure until it finds a cell with the receptor site that matches. It's going to land on that cell. Now, if you were inside the cell looking at the neuropeptide land on the cell, what you would see is that mind energy, which they now call a molecule, appearing in the cell, and what we would call it when it appears in the cell, what we call that energy is we would call it chemistry. So let's propose that we have a cell that's designed to function on love. And I have a thought that this is not right, my point is the not right compared to wrong. I have a thought that this is wrong. What
okay.
neuropeptide comes from me judging that as wrong, aside from a neuropeptide that's not based on love, and it's going to interfere with the cell that it produces chemistry in? Does that make sense?
Okay, yes, it does.
Okay. So now let's imagine I've got a silver dollar in my hand, or let's make it a quarter. I've got a quarter in my hand, and I have two people sitting in front of me, and I hold the quarter between them, and I say, what do you see here? And one looks and says, I see George Washington. The other one looks and says, I see, I don't know what's on it, the Washington, whatever it is. I see the Washington Monument or whatever's there. Now, I could say to the person on my right, now, you know, that person, that guy sitting beside you is called you a liar. He said that's not George Washington. He said that's the Washington Monument. And by the way, to the person on the left, I say, and this person's calling you a liar because they said you're wrong, that it's not the Washington Monument. It's George Washington. Now, who's lying here? Well, nobody's lying. The person who's looking at the head of the coin says, yes, this is George Washington. And the person who's looking at the tail of the coin is seeing something different. Now, the fellow who says it's George Washington is right, but that doesn't make the person who's looking at the coin and saying they see the Washington Monument or whatever it is that's on there, I know it's actually not the Washington Monument, but whatever it is, that doesn't make them wrong. The person who's sitting there looking at the Washington Monument is right, but that doesn't make the person who's seeing George Washington wrong. Make sense?
In other words, you're saying in their reality, they think it is so.
Correct. So now,
okay.
If I engage in the mind energy of making, if I'm the person who's looking at the tail of the coin, and I engage in the mind energy of making the guy who says it's George Washington wrong, what did I just insert into my structure? The mind energy and the chemistry
yeah.
of wrong. That's going to blow my cellular structure away, and I'm going to be in trouble. So we've been taught this right-wrong thing, and we put a big investment in it and all kinds of emotional energy and punishment, displeasing God, and God's going to get you, and hate and fear and, you know, all the things that go with it. And all of that in a cell destroys a cell. Whereas if I can sit and say, well, I see the Washington Monument, and I know that I'm right, and I can see that you have a different perspective, and I can see that, you know, from where I sit, you're not right, and that's okay. So I can embrace you, I can approve of you, I can hold you in the space, and I don't introduce any aberrant mind energy or chemistry into my structure. So the person who chooses to live in what I was taught as a kid is a hellish, horrific way to live, if I go around judging them, making them wrong, who am I damaging on a physical level? I'm damaging myself.
Self, inside, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes. Whereas if I can look at them and say, you know, that behavior looks so bizarre to me, and especially the way I was raised, boy, they would tell me that if I did that behavior, I'd go to hell. But you know something? It's not my job to judge you or send you to hell. It's not right for me, but hey. And now what have I done? I've actually kept my cellular structure connected to love, and I've extended that love to them. I'd say that's a whole lot better position than me telling them about how they're going to hell because they've done something wrong. And when I make them wrong, I introduce the energy of hell into my own cells. I do it to myself. And that's where forgiveness comes in, is that the forgiveness tool is about removing all of that judgment. That doesn't mean to say I have to go do that behavior. I have the right to assess before I take it into my structure whether something's right for me or not right for me. And I can say, according to the way I was raised or the way I now believe or my intuition, I can say, you know, that's not right for me. So I'm going to pass on that, but I can hold a space for you. I maintain the integrity of my own structure, and I become a space of active love in the world. And is it my business because they're doing whatever it is they're doing? No, it's not my business. The only place I have any business there is it right for me? No, then I'm not doing it. That's all. And then as I do that, I'll develop higher faculties. So if I come across something that's totally unknown, I can tap into it and go, is this right for me? Is this something for me to engage in or not? And I can say to myself, no, that's not right for me. But I don't have to pronounce that other person wrong. And now I'm living in a space. You know, there's an awesome story in the scriptures about this woman who is caught in the act of adultery. They want to trap Yeshua. So they bring her to Yeshua and say, now, what are you going to do with her? The law says we should stone her. What are you going to do? And, you know, Yeshua's proven he's very intuitive. He can tap into what's going on around him. And we're not told what he wrote in the sand, but we're told that he went over and he bent down and he wrote something in the sand. Here's what I suspect he wrote. He tapped into the number one accuser, AB. And tapping into AB, he bent down in the sand and he wrote, AB, remember last Tuesday night when you were with the neighbor's wife? And what did AB do? AB left. And then there was Oyving. And he looked at Oyving. And he tapped into Oyving's mind. And he says, Oyving, you know that business deal you've been doing where you've been ripping people off for the last 20 years? What are you doing? And what does Oyving do? Oyving's out of there. And he says, whoever is without, yeah, you want a stoner? Okay, whoever is without sin, whoever, you know, and I just laid out what you guys have been doing. Go ahead, cast the first stone. And then, following the logic of what I just said about right and not right, he turns to her and he says, woman, where are your accusers? Now, I can only imagine she was pretty relieved at that moment. She said, I don't know what you did to get rid of them, but they're gone. And he says, so, now, you know what energy is right for you, and you know what is not right. Don't go do the not right stuff anymore. And that word sin in Aramaic that he used is an archery term that means off the mark. He said, don't engage in energies that are off the mark for you. You'll destroy yourself. So he stood as a space of love and compassion. He held everybody accountable. He eradicated punishment from the world, and he instructed a woman on what would support her and what didn't support her. That, I would offer, is our place in the world, if we're going to truly function as human beings. I think Yeshua, in that case, you know, there's nothing about theology, there's nothing about religion that, in that case, what the man was doing was showing how a human being, a true human being that's functioning out of being, out of love, would act in that situation. And then he said to you and I, the things that I'm doing, you can do too.
And actually, you could believe in greater things than I'm doing. I'm still in the practice. I'm still in the learning phase. So I'm going to go farther, and you can go farther too. Dad, what most people do is hold him up as the shining example, the only example, and he's done it, and I can't do anything, and therefore I'll just kowtow to whatever somebody tells me about him. And I think that's not right. I mean, some people do it, and that's okay. It's not my business what they do. But for me, it's not right. I want to actually listen to the man. I want to actually hear what he said. And I've never seen anybody take things to the level that he did, so I'm always working to understand how he did what he did, because he told me and you that you and I could do the same thing. And that's where this teaching's come from. That's what it's all about.
Okay, so, like, I'm struggling, and this is, I know I'm in the egoic thought system. I'm struggling right and wrong. Like, I was with this in a store with one of my good friends, and I
right.
thought I saw her pick an item that she did not pay for and put it in the bag. 2 weeks later, I did not say a word. 2 weeks later, she
right.
said, you know, I picked up this item and I didn't pay for it. I did not say a word. But inside of me now, I'm with this right and wrong. You shall not steal. You did
right.
steal. That is wrong. Okay, that's the block, Michael, with the right
okay.
and the wrong.
So now let me tell you a story. Imagine I've got a quarter, and on one side of the
okay.
quarter there's George Washington, and the other side there's a Washington Monument. The person who sees
okay.
George Washington is right, but the person who's looking at the Washington Monument is not right. You're making the error of making her wrong. Now, I don't know. You know, maybe for her, stealing that is the thing that's going to get her put in jail, and she's going to learn the lesson of her eternal life from it. I don't know. And you know what? It's not my business to make her wrong. Now, it might be my business. You know, I might be guided to say, and you know, I watched steal that, and I feel like it's my job to let the store manager know, to hold you accountable for that. But if I make you wrong for that, I've entered a dis-ease energy in my own structure.
Okay, so that's
and you might want to listen to yesterday's show. You might want to listen to yesterday's show on accountability. We talked about accountability
okay.
yesterday. And that ties into this as well. So whose business is it, whether somebody steals, kills, rapes, or does whatever they do, whose business is it? It's not my business to direct their behavior. I don't know what they're setting up in their eternal lives. I don't know what they're setting themselves up to live. Again, it might be my job, if I were the observer of that illegal act, to call the police and make sure they get there in time to catch the criminal. But I still don't have to judge, make them bad or wrong.
Okay, so that's where the forgiveness tool comes in. So I
dismantle
this negative glob of discordant energy within me, correct?
You got it exactly, exactly. They're the precise words that would describe it best, better than I said it.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for
and whenever something,
today.
Yeah, yes. Whenever something that is out of harmony with love comes up inside of one of us, that's where our forgiveness work is, that discordant energy, and that's a good word for it.
Thank you. Thank you for your words. Thank you for this.
Honored and delighted. Glad to be on the team. And, you know, dig out the worksheets, and there's a place to, and who knows what you might find, you know. As you do a worksheet around that, you might find that raging parent who was in not right energy as they put the thumb on you for something you did that they considered to be wrong. And that might be a major piece of healing for you as you process that out. And, you know, maybe the lady who stole whatever she stole, maybe she was a fully conscious, realized spiritual being who set that up just so you could heal that situation that maybe happened to you when you were 4 years of age. I don't know. I don't know at all.
Yeah.
You know, none of us ever going to be able to figure that out. But what we can do is any time a discordant energy comes up in us, we can forgive it. We can remove it. And when we remove it,
we upgrade every aspect of our cellular function.
Yeah, because when I was a little girl, I mean this is unfolding a whole hornet's nest. When I was a little girl, my Girl Scout dues was a nickel. Well, after years going to the Girl Scouts, I decided I wanted a candy bar. So I took my nickel and I bought a candy bar. Well, I went home and my mother must have smelled chocolate. And she confronted with me, asked me about it, and I said yes. You know, I bought the candy bar, and her response was, "God's gonna punish you." This is something I've heard all my life. God's gonna punish you. Now I'm into the spiritual concept, where it's exactly different. Okay, or is it the same? You know, because actually.
Well,
with this discordant energy, I am punishing myself.
That's it exactly.
By judgment.
I think it was St. Augustine that said, we are not punished for our sins, we are punished by our sins. When I engage it in energy that's off the mark from my structure, I engage in self-punishment. My offering is, there is no concept, no motivation, no impetus toward punishment in any way, shape, or form from the Creator. Love isn't capable of that. And we're told very clearly that the Creator is love. This whole story about, that's all, you know, about how the punishment in the hell, that's all a story made up by people in fear who didn't understand to try to keep their kids and the people around them in line. It's all a fraud. If we were to discipline children, you know, we live in a culture that tells us discipline means these kids have to be properly beat up. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Well, you know, that's been used as a justification to beat kids with a stick or a belt. Actually, the rod and the staff, they comfort me. They're the things that I lean on for support. They're not things that I get beaten with. This whole thing's been misinterpreted and blamed, you know. The adult who didn't know how to handle their own pain and trauma, who put it on the child, had to have a scapegoat, and the scapegoat was God. There is no, I'm very confident from my experience directly of the being flooded by the presence of love, there is no such energy as punishment conceivable in the Creator's mind, not even conceivable. If I buy into a discordant energy, I just sowed something into my cells, and my cells are going to hurt, and my cells are going to suffer. They're going to become deformed. They're going to become diseased unless I forgive and remove that discordant energy. So that whole punishment game is a projection of humans. And, you know, the idea of hell, there was a garbage dump outside of Jerusalem. It's called the Gehenna. And they used to use it. It was on fire, you know, it was where they burned garbage. They actually, people who were indigent and couldn't afford burial, they'd take their bodies and burn them in the Gehenna. And so they used that as a thread with little kids. If you don't behave, I'll send you to the Gehenna, the fiery place. And, you know, it worked pretty well, so they created one for big kids, for adults. It's all a fraud. It's all a total, complete lie. Love could never conceive of creating an eternal hellfire for somebody to burn in. That's just a fantasy of a mind that does not have a connection to love. Total, complete projection and fantasy.
Right. And
that's
I realized at my age that I have bought into a habitual, and I am perpetrating and continuing that lie of God is going to punish you, and the right and the wrong and the belief systems. Yeah. But, okay. Thank you.
Delighted. Thank you for the question. It was a great opening.
Thank you. Bye for now.
All right. Blessing. Nice to hear your voice. Bye. It's been a while. All right.
Wonderful.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. By the way, you know, if you're doing worksheets on paper, you might just want to get on your phone, go to your app store, and type in the words Heartland, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And if you do that, you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. When you download it, you can fill out the worksheet process right there on your phone. You can print and save it and do your work without wasting any paper, and it's always there with you. You know, wherever you are, you don't have to be looking for a pen and paper. When you're sitting in a meeting, something resonates, you can just back up a little bit, do a worksheet right there on the phone, right in the middle of a meeting. Powerful. Awesome tool. And Jeannie, the work you've done, new version just became approved just a week or so ago, and so it is rock and roll. And if anybody's using it and you have any feedback or any suggestions of something we can do to put another feature in it or improve it, let us know, and we'll keep it moving in the direction of being of service and support for people really being able to tap into and move through this forgiveness process. So, Ms. Jeannie, do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up?
We do not have another hand up. The chat room's very quiet. Do have an anonymous question that was texted to me. And they wondered about, you know, of course, there were several instances in scriptures where Jesus brought people back from the dead, whether it was Lazarus or a little boy or a little girl, different times. There were different people. And they wondered, you know, about, you know, if, say, in Joel's case, and they had given him 12 to 24 hours to die, but with the energy and the love that everybody gave him, and now he's back, is there something wrong about bringing someone back when they're on the verge of death, because now all they have to do is they go through the process of dying again?
Good question. Good question. So my take is I had no idea of coming here to bring Joel back from the edge of death. There's a process where in bringing children into the world, there are people who specialize in supporting women birthing and bringing a child into the world, and they're called a doula. My thought was to be there for Joel as a death doula, to be there to hold the space, to support him if he's ready to go and moving on. And it sounded like he was ready to go and moving on. And he wasn't. And it was his choice, not mine. I had no concept of, Joel, you get back here or else. Not my job. I was just there to be that space, to hold that space, and to, you know, kind of like be the you know, somebody's going on a journey and you're at the train station and say, hey, have a great trip. Well, that's what I was there for with Joel. And physiologically, he decided to turn around and come back, and that was his choice, certainly not mine. I would never try to snatch somebody back from the edge of that. Not my business. But I can sure be the space. And, you know, he obviously made some different choices. Yesterday, when the hospice nurse came, she came into the room, and she was like, he's not supposed to be here. I don't believe this. And she said that to me, I don't believe this. And today she left just about maybe 45 minutes before the radio show started. And she's just like, I don't know what to say. I've never seen it before. But I'm real clear it was Joel's choice, not mine. And, you know, the other side of that, you know, to somebody, you know, if somebody were to pull someone back, then they just have to turn around and die again. Well, I'm going to put a question mark on that one. Who says we have to die? Who made that rule up? Well, if you go back into the ancient scriptures, they tell us who made it up. Here's what they say. With man, death began. We made it up. We are not designed to die. Now, from a physics perspective, and that's part of my history is physics, here's what I know. There's only energy, and energy is eternal. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. Now, they say that's a mystery. In the church, they say there's a mystery, too. There's God, and God always was and always will be, and is the only thing that exists. Oh, energy is the only thing that exists. You know, if you separate out the language, you hear the concept is exactly the same. And so if energy is eternal, then we must, and there's only energy, we must be energy, we must be eternal.
The only thing you can do is change the state of an energy system so that it looks like it's gone, but it's not gone. It's just melded back in and carries on. What if we stopped making death up? What if we faced every frequency in us that is less than love, forgave it, applied forgiveness, and removed it so there was nothing in us to kill us? What if 7.5 billion people woke up tomorrow morning and were in that state? I'll tell you what, the world would be a different place. Now people say, well, yeah, but there'd be overpopulation, all those fish. Like, give it up. You know, that's just a silly conversation. If we were living as true human beings, we don't have a clue what things would look like. We don't have a clue how things would be functioning. But I'll tell you what, it'd be a whole lot different than it is today. So I'd question invite the questioner, the person who asked that question, to think about, do you really have to die? And what would you have to do to overcome the death that has taken all the generations out of everybody that we all know? There's a significant piece of work. Now, if you go to Revelations, you hear Yeshua, and here's what he says. You know, when we're talking about this forgiveness process, you know, in our conversations, we're talking about removing or overcoming the control that the energies are off the mark exhibit over us. So Yeshua says, to he or she that overcomes, they will not taste of the second death. I would offer the first death is when we lose contact with the truth of who we are as love, and we function as personalities, as images in our minds. You remember that Yeshua's talking to a guy who wants to follow him, and the guy's got an excuse. He says, oh, well, I have to go bury my father. Now, when you understand what that meant, in the Jewish culture, it was a man's job, firstborn son, to take care of his parents till they died and bury them. So that's what that man was saying he was going to do. In other words, I'm going to do your work, Yeshua, but I got a way out. I'll be taking care of them. I'll be gone for a while. And Yeshua says, let the dead bury the dead. If you're actually going to do what I'm asking you to do, then you need to come and follow me. You need to pick it up and start to do it right now. And overcome your propensity toward death. Overcome everything in you. Forgive everything in you. And that means all of the genetic inclinations toward any form of hostility or fear that is in you. And then maybe you become a pillar in the temple, and the temple isn't a purple building with a purple curtain. The temple is your structure. And it says very specifically, you will go out no more. That's the end result of his work and this work. That's what we're heading for. So that's the invitation. Now, will we make it? I don't know. I know that I am far more vital and healthy than I was when I was 20. I mean, I was sick. From birth, they said I wasn't going to make it through birth. And I spent 25 years on an inhalator and pills. And every, you know, the first 2 weeks of school every year, I was in the hospital in an oxygen tent. I wasn't in school. I am 100 times more vital than that. And I've been circling the earth for a few decades since then. So can we regain health? Can we rebuild? Yeah. Is there some serious work? There's some serious work to be done. Serious energetic patterns to be faced. Serious softening and opening of the tissue structure that's holding on to whatever has gone on in our childhood, whatever energetic patterns we've learned from our culture and our family systems. There's some serious work to be done. So, and some people say, well, I got $5 in 5 minutes. Tell me everything you know. If you want something for $5 in 5 minutes, go somewhere else. You're not going to find it here. You're going to find a lifetime of work opening here and a lifetime of understanding. So that's what this work's about. That's what we're here to share with you. And if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you in our control panel, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you dial that number, you're listening to the show directly. And then if you have a question, all you do is push one. That raises a hand in the control panel, and we get to have a conversation. And I extend my thanks to Blog Talk Radio for providing us with this technology where you can be wherever you are in the world, and I can be in Lawrenceburg, Tennessee, and Jeannie can be in Bristol, Virginia, and this radio station can be up in New Jersey, wherever it is, New York, and you can be in Timbuktu, and we can have a conversation, and we can record it when the show's over. You can download it and send it to your friends. I mean, thank you, Blog Talk, for that technology opportunity. It's just, it's never been able to be done before. So, you know, there's an old thing of you're going to proclaim it to all the world. That's what we're here for. Go for it, sweetie.
We have two hands up. The first one, I believe, is Anne 760. You're on the air.
Welcome, young lady.
Yes, it is. Thank you. Yeah, I tried a couple times the way, you know, take the one off and put it back on, and it didn't work. So I just had to call back in. But I'm looking at a CD called Heartland, Kinder and Gentler Country, Songs by Joel Goldstein. I know.
That's Joel.
And so
he wrote that while he was at Heartland as a music director.
Yes, I pulled that out as you were speaking. I thought of it yesterday, but I pulled it out today as you were talking again with the update. And I go, I am just going to play that CD today in honor, you know, of just universe, what happened, how, you know, God worked in his body, how Joel made a choice. But I have listened
He'll
to
be
it before.
Thrilled.
I think I must have picked it up at one of your intensives, you know.
Right. When I get back to the room, I'll share that with him. He'll be very excited.
Yes, yes. And I mean, it just makes you smile, the song. I mean, it just triggers the joy, you know, that's inside when he, I'm just going to read for people who don't know what his music is like, the titles to the songs on this. Okay, and the first one is, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that's just, it's a great thing anyway. But then it goes on, Kindler and Gentler Country, Macro Mama, that's a fun one. Remember We Were Lovers, Read My Lips, Simply Amazed, Pointing Over the Fence, People Are People, I Love You, and I Love You and I'm Never Gonna Leave You, Garth Brooks album, Rodeo, Child of Eternity, and in parenthesis, Happy Birthday, Jesus, and Promise to Remember. And all of those are just, I mean, anyway, so yeah, so applauding for Joel's choice to tell him.
Yay.
One person who is out here listening to him.
Well, you just triggered a really sweet memory for me. The first year we were there, we had a support team of about maybe 15 people. And the front room in my house, we had not finished off yet. So we had a big, like several tables put together, and we would do dinner in the front room of my house. And the fellow who built the property, the homes at Heartland originally, was an old codger named Baker. And his wife was turning 84. And his wife had never had, we used to feed them all the time, and his wife had never had in her life a birthday party. So we had a birthday party for her, and everybody at Heartland was there. And Baker, who was really a miserable old coot, but his wife, they came down for dinner. And that song, I'm Simply Amazed With You, we probably sang that to her for 45 minutes, and she just sat there just in tears. It's like kind of a song you can sing in rounds. I'm simply amazed with you, simply amazed with you. You are the one that gets the job done. Even in hard times, it's looking like fun. And I'm simply amazed with you. So here we are in rounds, about 15 people, singing a song to this 84-year-old woman who's never had a birthday party in her life. So thank you for that memory. It just tingles everything and brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That is so cool to hear the rest of the story of that song, too.
Yeah.
Ah, that's just amazing. Okay, cool. Well, passing it on.
Cool.
Thank you.
And people can go to Spotify and find his music on Spotify. And also there are several of his albums. He's got about 15 albums out, several of his albums on YouTube. So if you just go to YouTube and type in Joel, J-O-E-L, Goldstein, S-T-E-I-N, and you'll find his albums there you can listen to. And I mean, he's just – Joel can write a song about anything. You know, like Kinder and Gentler. If you remember, that's back when what's his name, Daddy Bush was talking about Kinder and Gentler. That's where he wrote that song. And one of the first things I did when I put my hands on Joel when I got here, you know, he's pretty much catatonic. I put my hands on him and I said, Joel, you know, you can write a song about anything. And I bet you probably got a song running through your head right now about laying here in the bed. And I started to sing. Yeah, here I am in my hospital bed, and all of these thoughts are going through my head. And all of a sudden, Joel starts to hum with me and starts to sing with me. So it's pretty sweet, pretty awesome.
That was amazing. So the question I have, because the subtitle of songs by Joel Goldstein is in quotes, the singing dentist. So was he a dentist?
He's a dentist. He is a dentist, yes.
Oh,
He actually moved. He lived in Gainesville, Florida. When we started Heartland, he said, I want to come and help. So he moved his whole family to Heartland. They were there for about 2 years. He had quit his dental profession, and he actually was booking me. And one of the things that he used to say, you've heard me say this before, but that just so you can link it to what we're talking about, when he was booking me, you know, around the country at different venues, he would tell people that, you know, if I got the chance, I'd do a workshop in a phone booth, which, you know, I pretty much would if the right person's there wanting to hear. And so he moved his whole family to Heartland. They worked there for a couple of years. And then he decided to go back into dentistry. He actually bought a dental practice up, or started a dental practice. I'm not sure how it worked, in Ithaca, New York. Did that for several years, and then moved to a place called The Farm in Tennessee. And so this hospital is about 30 minutes from The Farm. You maybe heard of Ina Mae Gaskin. She's a woman who started the whole midwife movement, or made it really popular, wrote a lot of books about it. Actually, Ina Mae was my inspiration for us getting set up when my kids, Michael, Jay, and Krista, were born, to do births at home. That was due to Ina Mae, who was at The Farm. So, you know, some of you will have brain cells for Ina Mae Gaskin and how many people she touched. She certainly touched me. So they lived on The Farm for a time period, and he set up a dental practice here, or there in Summertown, Tennessee. And actually just he's kind of slowed down in that the last year or two. And so that's kind of the story.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you for sharing it. That's awesome. Anyway, I'll be thinking of him while I put this on in a little while.
Cool. Well, thanks for bringing up the titles of the song. Everyone's got a memory attached to it. And that one in particular was for Mrs. Baker. So bless her heart.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, awesome. What a connection.
Any other thoughts for you?
What a connection. I mean,
yeah.
No,
yeah, it's
I'm
pretty
good.
Sweet.
Thank you so much. Blessings.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Miss Jeannie, you got another hand up?
I do.
I'm simply amazed with you. Simply amazed
and
with you.
I sent you an email with your booking for tonight.
Oh, cool. Thank you.
Uh-huh. And awesome. I believe this is Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Hey, well, several things. First of all, going back to Audrey, your answer to Audrey, fantastic. I'm going to think about that. Just a very
good
answer.
Yeah, what are we doing to ourselves?
Yeah. You know, yeah, you're absolutely right. Such a good answer. And it leads me to ask, and I bet I know what you're going to say, but it's so, could you say that certain people in government have come to the planet to wake us up? I mean, can we get that friendly a feeling about them?
Say that again. Have come to. I didn't quite hear you.
Wake us up. Came for our benefit.
You know, it's. I see that as a distinct possibility that, as I said with her, that person who stole might have been a fully conscious, realized being playing the role just to open space for that piece of healing for her. And who knows what piece of healing her having brought that up is going to do for somebody else to listen to somebody else, and it gets back to that person and changes their lives. Who knows how those circles work? You know, that's why, you know, that number one pseudo-solution we offer in codependence is you can't figure it out. Forgive it and move on, you know, go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. So, yes, it's a good attitude to have since we don't really know what is going on. It's a good attitude to have for us. That's one thought, and I'm going to really think about that for everything that I feel triggered by. And then the other one is just a question. You talk about how if we had the right heart, the right mind, we wouldn't experience the first death or the second death. I don't remember the thing, but could the first death be a physical death and the second one be the death of our spirit or soul? The reason I ask is because even though I take good care of myself and I exercise and I eat right, I can't imagine not losing the physical body sometime in the near future, whether it's next month or in 10 years. And if I were to live till the time we're going to have that reunion at Heartland, what would our physical bodies be like? We would be like mummies who have to be carried up there and plopped into a chair.
If we stopped, quote unquote, go to the original meaning of the word sin, off the mark, archery term. If we stopped doing things that are off the mark, who says it would be anything other than light and awesomeness as we became more conscious? Why would it have to be decrepit? You know, that's a brainwash that the culture gives. Oh, well, everything's going to deteriorate. And there is this thing called entropy. You know, in the so-called physical world, things wind down. But there's another word, and the word is ectopy. And ectopy is a word that represents those things that stay connected are always gearing themselves up to higher expressions.
Okay.
So my take would be, based on what Yeshua said to that man about let the dead bury the dead, he's saying all these people that are walking around are already dead. In essence, that's what he's saying. So if somebody needs to take a pick and shovel out and dig a hole to bury somebody, let the dead do that. You've decided you want to come to life, so you're going to overcome the death of your true nature, which is love, and you're going to bring that back into expression in your physiology. So get off your buns and come with me. Follow me. Do what I'm telling you to do. And then, so my take would be the second death would be if we really supply this human energy system with what it's designed to be fueled by instead of hostility or fear, then it is eternal. And that's the second death, that you don't have to taste of that one. And that's where, if you listen to that quote from Revelations, we'll become a pillar in the temple. What's a pillar? You know, think about the southern mansions and that huge pillar. That's not going anywhere ever. Will become a pillar in the temple of the Creator and shall go out no more. In other words, we're not going to kill ourselves again. So that would be my take on it. That's my best understanding.
You could also, you know, examples in the scriptures. Noah was 600 years old when he was building the ark. You know, and Sarah was 90 when she had her first child. So
let that one go, Jeannie. Let's let that one go. I mean, we can keep trying, but let's let that one go. Yeah.
How come? Jeannie has a point. Although they did end up dying anyway, physically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it certainly leaves the question, is it a requirement? Now, you know, my understanding of it may be totally all wet and totally in error, but here's what I guarantee. Anybody who ties in
and works as though that's true will do nothing but benefit from it. Anybody who ties in
absolutely.
And works as though it's true, even if it's totally false, it's going to produce great results.
I can go that far, Michael. Yeah.
And the other side is going to kill you if you buy into it and it's an error.
I think with me, being the kind of person I've grown up to be, is since I appear to be heading in the direction of decrepitude, I don't want to attach a lot of guilt to it. And when you say if you clear out your stuff enough, you won't go in that direction, and I'm not achieving that. And so I'm sort of having self-examinations going on here. And I'd like to be free of that, and that's worksheet material. And speaking of that, there's a lot of worksheet material going on.
However, let me plug in before we move from that. My offering. We've been playing with you on this radio show and in workshops, intensives for about 4 years now. If I think back to the states that oftentimes we would hear from you that sounded like heading down the tubes.
Right.
It was fairly often. I don't hear that from you very often anymore. I hear you heading up mentally, emotionally, and relationally. So I think you are moving in the right direction. And I suspect if you did a real assessment of yourself 4 years ago and today, that your physical, mental, emotional, and relational health is better than it was 4 years ago.
Definitely. Definitely, definitely. I feel as if I'm standing on sort of solid ground when you say things like that. But when you go off and say, well, we can meet in 2049 or what? Or
No. That's too soon. No, it's 4949.
No, that's too soon. That's what I mean. Anyway, let's not even go there. I understand. And you and I have gone this route before. I have sort of needled you about this because something in me is resisting to it, and that's my business. And the other thing is I'm the anonymous person, but since you answered the question so graciously and you said you didn't intend to bring him back, I did a teeny worksheet right when you were answering, and I realized I know why I'm so triggered. When I was at hospice with my dying aunt, she kept saying, I want to go. It's time to go. And the nurses would come in and force feed her. And I got so pissed, I shut them out, and they said, you are not a Christian. Aren't you a Christian? What are you doing? And I said, I'm letting her die. It's not the worst thing. And so fight came back to me, and I realized, so I was sort of identifying with Joel, thinking, hey, wait a minute, this guy is being so nice to me. I got to come around. I got to sing. I got to crank up again for a while. Maybe I don't want to crank up. But he did, and I don't know. It sounds as if he enjoyed himself very much. But it was a complicated report when I heard you say, oh, my gosh, you know, I stuck his hand in the Addison. Why? Why are you doing this? And you said you didn't intend to bring him back, but
I'm here to support him.
Yeah.
I want his physiology. If he's getting ready to check out, I want his physiology to be as comfortable and capable of supporting him separating from his body consciously as possible. And I want his being to go on fully connected to love and knowing that there's a space here for him to do that. I was fully 100% okay with me.
That is a very important thing to add to your saga, your intention, which is a gorgeous one. And it's, you know, it could be just misconstrued by people who don't know, including me, who do know generally what you're about. But
everybody's got a reality.
You know, yeah. Okay.
All right, well, we're down to the last few seconds. The show's going to cut us off, so thank you, everybody, for joining us, and fun to have the conversation, discussion. Keep holding the space for us. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio.
with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.